Welcome, everyone. I get to stand in for Bill, who usually does introductions, and introduce Walter Taylor, who's going to talk to us and share some discussion with us tonight. He's been actually a Shambhala warrior teacher for over 20 years. He's been directing Shambhala levels, so he's definitely what they call senior teacher. I happen to know that he's a bit of an artist and a poet, and he wears bow ties, and he's a math professor, retired, right?
That's retired, yes.
Yeah. So, welcome, Walter.
Hey, thank you, Trudy. I think I know everybody's name, but maybe we just go around the circle with names once in case anyone else here needs to refresh and say hello or something. And you could say one interesting thing, plus your name.
My name is Tim, and I think the interesting thing is you were my teacher for the first class of the Lion series in the evenings quite a few years ago.
Yeah, kind of 6 or 7 years ago.
My name is Richard, and I spent a week at last week at Marpa House in a week doing. And that's spending about 12 hours a day meditating for 7 days.
My name is Margo, and I got on a horse for the first time yesterday in 5 years, and through the meditation and everyday life class, the woman Sarah, who's an instructor teaching a writing from within.
Mm. And you went and did it with her?
Yes.
Congratulations.
Yesterday. It was great.
So I'm Eric. somewhat in honor of Walter, let me just mention that what I'm doing intellectually right now is very exciting study of mathematics. And I really, it's so beautiful. I'm just sort of like on drugs or something with looking at this math.
I love to hear mathematics and beautiful in the same sentence.
I'm Rebecca. I don't have anything interesting. I got new kitchen countertops today.
Okay.
That was a big event.
My name is Carol. Something interesting. Well, the last few times I've been walking at Golden Ponds, I've seen at least 2 bald eagles.
Great. My name is Cimarron. Back in the old days, we called me Jean, but I'm Cimarron. Yesterday I was at a used CD store in Boulder looking for something special, and I asked for some old cowboy songs with yodelers to share with my dad. And we went to Denver today to the VA and played this music, and he had a really good time. And there were some yodelers on that CD from like the 30s. He was pretty excited.
My name is Trudy, and just to make a long story short, and Margo knows, we talked about this on our drive down to Boulder last night for the Shambhala training. But anyway, I had come in contact with a person who wasn't taking good care of his dog, and I ended up taking care of the dog when he was gone for a week. When he came back, I talked him into relinquishing the dog because he was keeping it in a cage, beautiful chocolate lab, keeping it in a crate all day, sometimes all evening, not feeding it well. It was skin and bones, and I talked him into relinquishing the dog, and I found a wonderful family that adopted her. And it was just the most wonderful feeling to have this lovely dog just have a great home. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So. My name's Michael, and I'm happy about Judy's dog. I have a lot of coincidental ties to the Shambhala community, although I've never done any formal practice. I've been meditating for over a year now on my own. And I've done work in the Great Stupa 3 years in a row. My painting company does almost all the painting for Naropa University. I painted Trungpa Rinpoche's house and cascade in 10th.
Oh, wow.
Have had a lot of transmission type dreams. It sounds woo woo, but I mean, very sincerely, I feel very connected to this community. So I thought I'd come and see all of you.
Welcome.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And your name?
Michael.
Far out.
Yeah.
My name's Marilee, and I AD'd a level 5 this last weekend, and some of the people had done that week and that whole week, and that was interesting, and it was wonderful. I it's been a long time since I did a level and just felt completely engrossed and relaxed. It was awesome.
My name is Trudy, and you know, Bill loves mathematics too.
Yeah.
They both are doctors of mathematics and share that. And as long as we're on that, I was thinking of a road trip that you and Bill made to Colorado Springs to teach a Shambhala level many, many years ago.
That was the only level I ever coordinated.
So they took a Shambhala level on the road to Colorado Springs. It had quite an adventure, I think.
It was quite an adventure. We did not succeed in planting Shambhala training there. Mm-hmm. Continuity wasn't great after that level, but it was really fun.
It's planted now, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is it?
Mm-hmm. Oh. Definitely.
You tell me more about it. Because I didn't know that. Mm. Okay, so perhaps get started. I told Roland that my talk would be called An Evening with Shantideva. Mm-hmm. Who's heard of Shantideva? Or who hasn't, maybe? Yeah, a couple. Okay, so I'm going to say a few words about Shantideva, and then we're going to have discussion of some things that he wrote. Shantideva lived sometime in the 8th century in Tibet. And that was a period when that was the literate part of the world, and most of our ancestors were in the illiterate part of the world. And Buddhism had recently come to, no, excuse me, India. India being the center. I'm thinking of somebody else from India, also a literate part of the world. And Nalanda University was the place where he hung out. And he was ostensibly a simple monk, and even thought to be one of the worst monks, because he never came to his meditation cushion, or seldom. But all of a sudden he surprised people with this book entitled The Way of the Bodhisattva. I think I'll pass this one around so you can just get a look at it. There's two versions of this. That's just the raw text of Shantideva in a beautiful translation. This book by Pema Chodron, who most of us know, has the same text, but it's interposed with paragraph after paragraph of Pema's commentary on Shantideva. Oh, wow. Entitled No Time to Lose. And just to get some sense, it's completely pithy, completely understood. There's almost no technicalities in it. And so I'm just going to start with a few and ask you to comment on what you think of these things. So let's start with what he had to say on meditation, 5.2. Wandering where it will, the elephant of mind will bring us down to pains of deepest hell. No worldly beast, however wild, could bring upon us such calamities. If with meditation's rope the elephant of mind is tethered all around, our fears will come to nothing, every virtue drop into our hands. That's his first statement about meditation as such. What does he mean when he says that the elephant of mind wandering where it will bring us down to pains of deepest hell?
It's just the mechanism of the mind itself, how it works, is that thoughts, emotions, are a perception, just a perception. But beyond that perception, in meditation, from just what I've experienced myself, there is an absolute joy behind all of that that is not tied to thought, it's not tied to emotion.
Yeah, but where's the hell come in? You're ahead of yourself. Where'd the hell come in?
I wanted to say, just, I love the image of the elephant, because sometimes that's how I feel inside my head when I'm churning with thoughts, and they're not just floating lightly through, they're kind of going, you know, they're heavy, and they get heavy, and the heavier they get, sort of, the heavier I get, and when I get caught in that kind of a cycle, I think the elephant has gotten away from me and is taking me, you know, down to sort of maybe basic fears, or maybe even just basic neurosis.
So hell here could translate as basic fears or neurosis, or were you going to say something?
Well, I was going to say that, you know, I experienced that this evening because I was just sitting here, you know, that's what we're doing, we're all just sitting here, and suddenly a tremendous amount of grief came over me because I was thinking of my friend who's dying right now. And so, you know, the elephant just marched in and brought me into such a sad and terrible place, and really, I was just sitting here.
Oh, wait a minute. I feel like that feeling, maybe it's that you've been obstructing that feeling, and then to sit and just allow that, to allow yourself to feel that grief, I don't think of that as the elephant. I think of the obstructions as the elephant.
Well, it was painful.
Yeah. And that's part of life, you know, that's part of what we get.
Right, but I was still just sitting here. He wasn't right in front of me. You know, I was here. It was my mind that was bringing up, you know, that particular thing. I was just here. You know, we're here sitting. And the mind is doing what it wants, and my mind said, deep emotion.
Well, what do you think about the next verse that says, if with mindfulness rope that elephant of mind is tethered all around, our fears will come to nothing?
I've experienced that living in a very tense, anxious place where the same story was going over and over and over through my head. And finally, I was able to realize it was just me doing it. There wasn't anything external to me. And I was able to sit and kind of release. I don't feel it like I'm tethering it. I feel like I'm releasing it, I guess, more.
Yeah, and I think you're right there that the way the Shambhala group has talked about meditation over the years has been more in terms of release or letting go than in terms of some kind of tethering.
So maybe the idea is, I was tethering my mind to the moment instead of letting that same story, that
that same experience repeat itself over and over.
Yeah, maybe that was it, because I think of what the Sakyam says, taming the mind.
He does say taming the mind, yes.
So that can, could be somewhat like, you know, a lead rope and working with your mind.
When it's tethered, though, it's not running away with itself, so your mind's not going off. It's held
here.
Yeah, I mean, the tethering is kind of aggressive from our point of view, but the idea of holding.
I'll move on to another one. To shrines and all supports of bodhicitta, bodhicitta meaning here awakened heart. Also, I told you there was no jargon in this, but there are just a small bit of vocabulary. To shrines and all supports of bodhicitta, I bow down. All abbots who transmit the vows, all learned masters, and all noble ones who practice dharma, until the essence of enlightenment is reached, I go for refuge to the Buddha. I also take refuge in the doctrine and all the host of bodhisattvas. What's that, of course?
The refuge vow.
That is a statement of the refuge vow. And I don't know if you're familiar with refuge vow. Rebecca, are you familiar with refuge vow? Well, it's something like this. We place our refuge on not materialism, but the teachings of the Buddha and the so-called Dharma, meaning what's true or meaning what's been transmitted. And the here he says the hosts of bodhisattvas. We could just say would-be bodhisattvas, the Sangha, us here. So he does take refuge a number of times in this book. It's part of his overall proclamation of things is to say that. But I thought I would just read one of those so you get the idea. And then I'm going to move on to what Shantideva has to say about the bodhisattva vow, which this whole book is, in a sense, a proclamation of a very elaborate and detailed bodhisattva vow. It's this thing the bodhisattva will do. The bodhisattva here meaning awakened being. It's a aspiration of Buddhist people to come closer to the bodhisattva state. If with kindly generosity one merely has the wish to soothe the aching heads of other beings, such merit knows no bounds. No need to speak, then, of the wish to drive away the endless pain of each and every living being, bringing them unbounded virtues.
I have to read that one again.
Yeah, if with kindly generosity one merely has the wish to soothe the aching heads of other beings, such merit knows no bounds. No need to speak then of the wish to drive away the endless pain of each and every living being, bringing them unbounded virtues. And he says we could start with soothing one or two beings, but then we could focus or make a wish to take care of every single being. What do you think of that?
Well, that is what we do when we take the bodhisattva vow, is we vow to keep on working with others until all beings are taken care of and we're enlightened.
Well, I think it relates to perfection. You know, like, if you think, well, I can't take the bodhisattva vow because I would, you know, I'm sort of limited. I wouldn't, you know, be able to handle everyone, handle all the pain in the world all at once. And I think part of the point is there, it's okay to take a small step first.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah, and Pema, in her commentary, talks about taking a small step and doing what we can. That's the main thing, she says, just to keep doing what we can. Here's another one that...
I really like that, Eric, because I won't take
books. It's like, you know, how could I possibly do that?
And
Drew
Culp was in Culpus.
Here's another one in the Bodhisattva realm. For all those ailing in the world, until their every sickness has been healed, may I myself become for them the doctor, nurse, the medicine itself. Raining down a flood of food and drink, may I dispel the ills of thirst and famine. And in the ages marked by scarcity and want, may I myself appear as drink and sustenance.
It's like that Jataka tale about the elephant that throws itself over the cliff. So the starving people crossing the desert will have food.
Is that the whole story, or does more happen?
That's it.
Yeah.
They're crossing the desert, and they meet this beautiful white elephant. And he says, don't despair, there's an oasis ahead. When they get there, there's the body of the elephant threw itself off a cliff.
But the interesting part in that story is that the people themselves, when they recognize that the elephant is her, which has befriended them, because she came out to the desert and actually communicated with them, there's sort of this discussion, like, should we really eat her? Because how horrible to be eating our friend. But then they realize that she sacrificed herself so that they could survive. And so they do. And survive. I'm working on that story.
I was thinking about Tom Lennon when you said that.
Go on a little bit more and say what Tong Lin is.
taking in and breathing out, giving out, taking in others' pain or suffering, and breathing out space and
some kind of relief.
Yes. So I don't know. That's what resonated for me when you read that part.
Yeah. I think I won't comment on that. It seems like, yes.
And also, I think it relates to animals in general that are our food source.
Could you say a little more, Carol?
Well, if we have a reverence for them, because they have allowed themselves to be a food source, I think that's part of it, too.
My son-in-law is a bow hunter, and a lot of people do not approve of hunting. But he hunts to feed his family, and he comes from a tradition of hunters. And he does a specific kind of gratitude blessing and thanks the animal for the animal's life and so forth after he's shot it and before he does what he needs to do to take it down the mountain. So I don't know what that says, but I think he's there acknowledging that the animal has given up his life. Or he's taken it. He's acknowledging actually that he's taken his life, but that he is going
to. Values
it. Yeah.
Here's another one. For I am like a blind man who has found a precious gem within a mound of filth. Exactly so, as if by strange chance, the enlightened mind has come to birth in me. Has come to birth in me, the enlightened mind has showed up inside me.
Could you read that one again?
Yeah, let's... For I am like a blind man who has found a precious gem within a mound of filth. Exactly so, as if by some strange chance the enlightened mind has come to birth in me. And somehow you found this gem.
And how do I even recognize the gem? Blindness.
What I get from that is resist the temptation to fall into the habit of thinking of yourself as just filth. Okay? Because that's not quite right.
What might be there besides filth?
Well, a jewel. Right.
It's like finding your basic goodness. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is basically a proclamation of basic goodness, or if you will, Buddha nature. That, now he goes on at great length, which I didn't actually earmark one of those, but he goes on at great length about how the body is filth, and why are we so attached to the body when it's just a bag of bones and filth. But at the same time, he says something like this, that in the midst of all that, and there is something there, there is some kind of gem. And this was the idea of bodhicitta, or basic goodness, awakened heart. And that's actually the basis for the whole thing, is that we have that kind of inner strength. We actually have the strength to do at least some of this, some of the time. Anybody want to say more on that?
I wonder what he would have thought about the body, knowing all the things that we're learning about it now, like the fact that cells seem to have intelligence,
mm-hmm.
and the way the body and mind and heart are one interacting entity. I mean, I see the point about the bag of bones and filth, because ashes to ashes, dust to dust,
yeah.
But there's also the point that we wouldn't be here doing what we're doing without this body.
Hmm. But we also, I mean, I think part of the basic goodness in discovering the jewel is rediscovering appreciation of all of that, actually, of our life force, maybe not of
particular shape.
Yeah, but life force.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that, Carol. It's really true that I think our Shambhala teachers in the 21st century are going the direction you're talking, that, you know, we're all, including Chögyam Trungpa, encouraged us to really take care of the body. And the body is kind of an expression of our enlightened mind, or at least our discipline in looking toward an enlightened mind. So, Shantideva's point of view or twist on things is maybe not quite what we do. Although, in what I was mentioning before, it's really a question of pointing out our attachment to us. Our attachment and our failure to remember that the body is going to die. And so he's getting at impermanence and that, those body things. In fact, I've got five references here to our fleeting life, which was very important to the Buddhist understanding of, our path. You know, why are we here? And one of the reasons, one of the so-called four reminders, is that our life is going to be short. And he says that a number of different ways. I'll read you one and see what you think. Excuse me. The thought came never to my mind that I too am brief and passing thing. And so, through hatred, lust, and ignorance, I've been the cause of many evils. Never halting night or day, My life is slipping by, and nothing that has passed can be regained. And what but death could be my destiny? So that's a regret. Regret of things that we've done, and some idea that we're leaving the body behind, and maybe it's only the karma or our behavior that could be carried on. Here's another one. Today, indeed, I'm hale and hearty, have enough to eat, and am without affliction. And yet this life is fleeting and deceptive. This body is but briefly lent to me. And yet the way I act is such that I shall not regain a human life. And losing this, my precious human form, my evils will be many, virtues none. Here is now the chance for wholesome deeds, but if I fail now to accomplish virtue, what will be my lot? What shall I do when trapped in lower realms, enmeshed in misery? Never there performing any virtue, only perpetrating evil. Thus for 100 million eons, happy states will never come to me. This is why Lord Buddha has declared that like a turtle that perchance can place its head within a yoke, adrift upon a shoreless sea, this human birth is difficult to find. And the last stanza there about the turtle reflects, people know this legend? How does it go?
Getting precious human birth is about as difficult as kind of lassoing the head of a turtle in the vast ocean.
Yeah, in fact, it's a blind turtle, and the turtle has got to put his head through this yoke that's floating on the surface. And that's about how hard, says Shantideva, that it is to attain a human birth. And what he's lamenting here seems to be that you got a chance to do something worthwhile in this life. And if you let life slip by, neglecting all your opportunities to do something useful, worthwhile, you may end up in a karmic situation of these hellish situations where it's doubly hard to do anything worthwhile. You get into born into a gangster family, or you can think of a zillion scenarios where.
Are you familiar with that part of our Buddhist belief system about being reborn?
No.
I thought maybe you were looking like, what the hell are you talking about?
Go on, Trudy, say a little more.
That is what. Part of why we are, why death is important to us, is that we know that we will be born, we were born, and we will suffer some in our life, and we will die. And what we do in our life, that's what karma is. That's the result. We build, we hopefully earn merit throughout our life that will enable us to have a better rebirth. Once we die, not this form, not me, but my, I guess you could say my life force with attached deeds, good and bad, moves on and finds, or is found, and has another opportunity at life, but it could be a good life, or it could be in a hell realm, is what we talk about sometimes. It could be a human life.
So this is all by way of warning, and it's all by way of motivating the bodhicitta life. One more of these precious human birth sequences. One man dreams he lives 100 years of happiness, but then he wakes. Another dreams an instant's joy, but then he likewise wakes. And when they wake, the happiness of both is finished, never to return. Likewise, when the hour of death comes round, our lives are over, whether brief or long. Though we be rich in worldly goods, delighting in our wealth for many years, despoiled and stripped as though by thieves, we must go naked and with empty hands. So whatever worldly possessions and wealth and fame and whatnot will not travel with us. We all knew that, right? But he puts it in your face here in the book. I want to move now to the topic of patience. Patience is one of the virtues of the bodhisattva, and Shantideva spends lots of time talking about patience, and I want to read what Pamela says is the best known verse in the entire book. Here it goes. To cover all the earth with sheets of hide, where would such amounts of skin be found? But simply wrap some leather round your feet, and it's as if the whole earth has been covered. What's going on there? What's he trying to tell us?
Could you read that again?
Yeah, let's. To cover all the earth with sheets of hide, meaning leather, where could such amounts of skin be found? But simply wrap some leather around your feet, and it's as if the whole earth has been covered. So you can...
I like it, but I'm not sure what it says about patience. It just speaks of shoes.
And warm feet.
Pardon?
You can change yourself, you can't change the whole world.
That, I think, is sums it up, yeah. One image is there's kind of rocks and thorns and whatnot in your path. So you could try to cover the whole path with leather. Give yourself a royal path to walk down. Or you could simply get a pair of shoes and protect yourself from the rocks and thorns that way.
What does that relate to? We say the armor of patience.
What does that have to do with patience? Well, you know, we can really want to have everything our way. Going through life, say, hey, get that leather in front of my feet. Hey, how come you forgot that patch? Or maybe we could be a little gentler by just bringing our leather with us and not requiring the world to shape up on every corner.
Or accommodate us.
What's that? Comedy?
Accommodate us.
Accommodate
the world
us.
Accommodate us.
Seems like it would take a lot more patience to cover the world with leather than...
Well, yeah. I guess the idea is you could order somebody to do it for you. I don't know. But, we're talking about expectations here rather than you might just expect to have first class service wherever you go. It's an interesting question what to do with these little epithets that we get, these little whatever epitaphs or whatever they are. Maybe these will kind of come back to us. That, you know, every so often we'll think, oh yeah, Shantideva talked about that. Anybody here, one of the older students, have any experience where Shanti Deva has suddenly come to mind? This one has come to mind to me, I must say.
No, I'm intrigued because I really haven't related that much to it.
I'm curious, did you run across
Clubs, yes.
The one where, and I'm wanting to remember it, I wish I'd written it down, on a week ago Friday night at the Chicago Shambhala Grand Opening, mm-hmm. ribbon cutting, and the Sakyong spoke and quoted Shanti Deva.
Did he?
Yes. And what he said, paraphrasing here, was, if I affect one person's life, if I make a difference in that one person's life, my life has been worthwhile. Did you run across
it? I did run across it. I don't think I necessarily have it in these notes right now. Sorry. But I think you said it very well. So, and I'm interested to hear that the Sakyong has not forgotten Shanti Deva. So,
one of the parts that you haven't talked about that I think of fairly often is the part about when you're in the midst of emotional turmoil, you should be as a log.
Yeah, I've got the "be as a log" quotes here. Let's move to some of them. Okay? Would you like me to read some of those?
Sure.
There's more than one.
Are we skipping more over patience?
This is still patience. This is still, being like a log is patience. Right? Hey, you just sit there and be like a log. Try telling your dog to just be like a log. Yeah. Okay. So they're at 5:48. Thank you for mentioning that. When the urge arises in the mind to feelings of desire or wrathful hate, do not act. Be silent. Do not speak. And like a log of wood, be sure to stay. When the mind is wild with mockery and filled with pride and haughty arrogance, and when you want to show the hidden faults of others, to bring up old dissensions or to act deceitfully. Now, when you want to fish for praise, am I doing okay with this?
Hitting everyone.
Or criticize and spoil another's name, or use harsh language, sparring for a fight. It's then that, like a log, you should remain. You could make probably a pretty good song out of this. And when you yearn for wealth, attention, fame, a circle of admirers serving you, and when you look for honors, recognition, it's then that, like a log, you should remain. And when you want to do another down and cultivate advantage for yourself, and when the wish to gossip comes to you, it's then that, like a log, you should remain. Impatience, indolence, faint-heartedness, and likewise haughty speech and insolence, attachment to your side, when these arise, it's then that, like a log, you should remain. Did he leave anything out?
At the beginning of that, all I could think of was myself behind the wheel of a car. And immediately, somebody does something, I'm not a log. I mean, I'm always...
It's true, saying, I've ridden with you.
And he's reminding us that a lot of damage is done by speech. A lot of these had to do with speech. And you could get a little toy log, like a Lincoln log, and hang it from the rear view.
There you go.
I would need to get it on the head.
Maybe a dowsing stick.
I mean, we could all do with a little toy log.
Is it? Mm. You're the only one that does that.
I'm curious, does he talk about coming back to the blind with the gem in the midst of the muck?
Rubbish heap, they say, yes.
Right. I've been working on this question for a long time, having to do, not specifically Shantideva, but in a sense, the path.
And yeah.
So I'm still working on the question, but it goes something like this, which is the view that without some kind of guru, Buddha,
something to wake us up,
yes, that we will not wake up?
Yes, I think, yeah, you put it bluntly, but yes, that seems to be the view. That, well, you know, even Trungpa Rinpoche, somewhere he says, there have been intuitive Buddhists, there have been people that just somehow found this. So it's not impossible, but your chances aren't very good of recognizing the goodness within.
Well, so we have this.
You go on.
Paradox, in us. We have this basic goodness. We have this innate.
Yes. And where's the paradox?
It is our nature.
Yes.
But our awareness of it
is limited at best.
Is obstructed.
Yes, obstructed by. By what?
By what?
Yeah. What is it that's obstructing us from seeing?
Our own mind.
Yeah, mental events. Struggle. Remember in that first class in Meditation Everyday Life, I was talking about struggle. And we get to believe in the struggle more than we believe in the inner truth of basic goodness. Have you seen that bumper sticker that says, don't believe everything you think?
and it's also true that from birth on, we are conditioned by our family situation, our community, and that also can be an obstacle to actually believing in your basic goodness.
Well, it's even bigger than that. It's society.
Mm-hmm.
It's many, many things.
Mm-hmm. And Margot, it's, I think, a very personal thing. I mean, I have to somehow see in practicing, and I think I have seen this in after lots of practice, that start actually feeling that quality of goodness. And I'm pretty sure that that's what brings us back. So everybody here has felt something. You know what I'm talking about?
That's why I came. Just in my own self-meditation or practice, when I I'm aware of the awareness and I'm concentrating, I become this focus of just being aware of the thoughts, but no longer the thoughts are controlling me. There is a joy, there is something really beautiful there. It's intoxicatingly wonderful and affirming. And I think teachers accelerate that. They can accelerate that. But we have it. We just have to sit and look for it.
Well, what I'd like to say is something like, a little while ago we were talking about the reincarnation and the precious human birth.
Yeah.
Well, you can also take that in a more finer grain thing, like within this lifetime, You spend part of your time in hell, from which you see no escape.
Yeah.
And then there are other times when you do have this precious moment when you are connected to the possibility of something more. You know, and that is so precious.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
Yeah. It's gratitude for just being alive.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think all of us have spent some time in hell, and one of the characteristics of that is you don't know how to get out. I mean, you're just you're there.
We're like the blind man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What did you say, Richard?
Richard.
Richard, what did you say?
I said we're like the blind man.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And yet the jewel is right there in front of us all the time.
It's
9:01. Mm-hmm. Is this the witching hour?
It is.
Okay. Well, do we? Can we do a dedication?
We can. I'll get the chance for who needs them. You find me a dedication?
I think so.
Okay.
Depends on what you're shooting.
We're going to get the book just in case they're not feeling the right.
Quickly ask among all of you, is there anybody here who doesn't solidly believe in reincarnation who has questions? Okay.
It's not a solid belief,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, it's sort of like if you meet the Buddha on the road, killing kind of thing. Yeah. So.
In Shanti Deva's time, I think it was an unquestioned belief all over the place. I mean, all people in India believed in it.
Yeah.
In the year 800.
Yeah.
It's naturally going to appear in the book. It's just a fact. He doesn't try to justify it.
I don't disbelieve. I just have no proof yet in my experience.
Before we,
right,
and I just want to thank everyone for having me here, and I always love coming to Longmont because it's such a wonderful group here. So, and you know, the last time I didn't come, you know what day that was? She knows because I told her. But Thursday, the 13th of September, I was due to come here. And then it was, one didn't drive to Longmont that night.
That's for sure.
So much has happened.
So I'm so glad I got that past me and I got to be here. Okay, so we will dedicate whatever good has been generated here. You do both of them?
We do.
By this
merit, may all obtain obeisance to me, defeat the enemy wrongdoing, from the stormy waves of earth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara, may I free all beings. I have the confidence of the golden sun of Hades, and the lotus garden of the victim's wisdom bloom. May the dark ignorance of sentient beings be dispelled. May all beings enjoy profound, brilliant glory.
And we could bow to each other.
A quick announcement, which is rather unusual for us. We know